Hey guys, welcome to this very special TFL car chat because I've got Case, and Case, what else do we got?
We've got all kinds of American muscle. So of all the episodes for me to be taking Tommy's seat to talk about mostly Corvettes, this is the one that I'm happy to be on.
Yeah, if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast platform, we are standing in front of $220,000 worth of American sports slash muscle slash sporty cars, I guess?
V8s and one V10 that we'll talk about as well. Although it's funny, the majority of that $220,000 is in one car, yep, specifically.
Yep. And even if you combine all these cars, it's still less than a modern 911.
Yeah, but we do have some pretty affordable muscle in here. We've also got the newest, most cutting edge that you can get. So we're really gonna talk about a pretty broad range of some awesome cars. Really some of our favorite cars we've ever owned.
Yeah, this is really a Corvette special because we have owned pretty much every Corvette except for the C1 and the C2. And if you're listening to this, I am standing next to the 1968 C3, and we're gonna go through and walk it and show you everything around it and show you all the cool features. The next to it is the C4 Corvette, but this one's special, isn't it, Case?
It's not any C4, it's the ZR1, so it's arguably, I would argue, the top of the food chain, because the Grand Sport was also really cool. So there's maybe a debate to be had there, but the ZR1 was the most expensive of the C4s, so very impressive.
And then behind it, we have the natural competitor to the C4 ZR1. And by the way, the 4, if you guys are new to Corvette, just means fourth generation.
Yeah.
So C is Corvette and 4 is fourth generation. But this would have competed directly with the ZR1. And what is this?
It's a 1994 Dodge Viper. And as much of a Corvette guy as I am, I will admit, this is one of, if not my single favorite vehicle the company has owned since I've been here for the last 6 years.
Yeah, this is, you know, the quintessential American muscle car. All attitude and all crap interior, but we'll get to that in a second. And then finally, we have our newest purchase, which we just traded in for our 2020 Chevy C8, the eighth generation Corvette. And this is the new 2025 C8 Z06.
Yeah.
And this is a much different beast. And actually, there's one bit of interesting information that the ZR1 and the Z06 share over all the decades. And that is, Case, that there has not been an overhead cam Corvette since the ZR1, until you get to the Z06.
Yeah, so this C4 ZR1 was pretty revolutionary, being a dual overhead cam V8 that we'll talk about because this is a very interesting engine. So it's pretty cool. We get to look at the progression of these cars over quite a broad range of time. Like you said, we haven't had a C1 and a C2. We also haven't had a C7.
Nope.
But we've owned more generations of Corvettes than ones that we haven't had.
Yeah, we've had a C5, we've had a C6. Of course, like I said, I went on the launch of the C7, so I'm very familiar with that. And now we have what I think is the ultimate, the most balanced of the current new Corvettes, which is a Z06. Of course, there's a ZR1 and a ZR1X and an E-Ray, but I think this is the one you want, and we'll get to that. But let's start with not the C1, not the C2, because I got to tell you, Case, I don't know a lot about those two cars. I have sat in the C1 and I don't fit.
Yeah, which is a bit of a problem.
It's very upright. And of course, C stands for Corvette, and Corvette stands for, well, it's a type of military boat. And that's how the Corvette was named, a class of military boat, the Corvettes.
A lot of the C1s, as they were getting the car going, weren't necessarily hot rods when the car first started out. And then, of course, the C2 is an absolutely beautiful car, but it's not mechanically sophisticated, I would say.
Especially the split window is gorgeous.
Yeah, 63, yeah, stunning. One of the best looking cars on the road, period. This C3 is a really nice combination because you can find some pretty affordable C3s out there. This one we got for around about $20,000, but you can find especially later model C3s for even less because these cars went from, 68
first year, all the way
to 82.
Yep.
So it was a long production run and the car changed a lot over that time. This being a first year, I actually like it a little better because it's got the classic chrome bumpers.
Yeah, that's what they're known for. These are called the chrome bumper cars. And in this video slash podcast, we're also going to start all of them up. So it's really interesting. And then at the end, we should start all of them up.
At the same time?
At the same time, yeah.
How many gallons of fuel per minute do you think that would be?
A lot. But let's go back to this. So I've got a hot take on the C3. This is my favorite of all the Corvettes from a style perspective. Now, a lot of people would disagree with that, but I love the classic big haunches, Coke bottle shape. This is just a classic American muscle slash sports car, depending on how you want to look at it. And we were lucky enough to get the first year, or maybe unlucky enough. There's a story that Car and Driver tells about this car. So when, I think it was Car and Driver, when Chevy built this car, they delivered it to Car and Driver for review. And a week later, Car and Driver gave it back and said, give it to us when it's done.
Yeah, which was a harsh but possibly fair critique, because there are some strange things. Like the door handle setup on this car. So on later C3 Corvettes, that's all you do.
Yep.
Push that down, that pops open the door. On this car, you've got to push this additional little lever. So there's kind of two levers built into the door, and it's a slightly strange operation, I've got to say.
Want to show the other strange thing? Want to show the windshield wipers?
Yeah, the windshield wipers are at least strange in a cool way.
Yeah, so this is the only year of the C3 where the windshield wipers actually completely retract behind this little cowl. And Case will show you, will demonstrate.
It's a bit of give and take. This one is kind of a cool feature. I might have to get the ignition on.
Let's start it up and let's listen to it, and then let's see if we can show them the wipers. So
getting into this car is a good way to tear or dislocate your hip flexor if you're not prepared for it. Look. As much as I would like to think I am, I'm not actually that massive of a dude.
You're not.
My legs could be bigger. And look at the issue with sliding my leg under the steering wheel.
You know why that is. First of all, that is a smaller steering wheel. So the previous owner actually put on a smaller one. Don't start it up yet. So imagine if you had the full-size one. But this is the complete bean can of a Corvette. A C3. So there is only one option on this car. And you could have gotten an option where that steering wheel actually tilted up so you can get in.
Which would have been lovely.
But the only option we got, and this is also, you know how like Corvette guys like to talk about, like, this is one of, that's yellow, and you know, this only one of 200 C3 68 Corvettes with a 3-speed manual.
Which is not necessarily an option that you want.
No, you want the 4-speed manual.
It was not a particularly expensive upgrade to get a 4-speed. This instead is a 3-speed. So genuinely a pretty rarely seen feature, although not a desirable rare
feature. This might be a one of one in terms of bean can Corvette. So the only option this came with, it didn't even have...
No power steering, no AC.
Look, there's no... If you look over there, there were like little pockets on the front where you could like have... They didn't have a glove box, but there was like a little pocket there to hold things.
That is a crazy thing to
keep out on. We don't even have the pocket. But what we do have is a convertible top. So one option, one option only, because the 3-speed was the base.
Yeah.
The 3-speed manual, I should say, but we do have the convertible. So this car came with one option, and that is a convertible. So start it up and listen to it. It sounds glorious.
Tell you what, even a base car, it's still got a V8, Roman.
Yeah, now that is a Chevy 350 V8, the way God intended. Okay, now watch the way the wipers work.
Yeah,
so check this out.
Is really cool. When you flip the wiper on, a panel moves out of the way. The wipers come up from behind the hood. So it's a really neat operation, and it cleans up the front end of the car a little bit.
And then do it again. I want to show them something. Cole, come over here and show them the way the mechanism works. It's really cool. When you watch it from this side, you'll see the mechanism and how it moves the wipers beneath the wiper. You see that little spinny arm? How cool is that?
Which is a tough thing for podcast listeners, but I'd say if you're just listening, it's worth looking up a video of how these wipers work. It is a very neat thing.
And those are vacuum operated, I believe, which means that they usually don't work. So find a car with working ones. You want to pop the hood while you're down there?
Yeah.
And we can show them what's under the hood. So of course this came with a 350, and the big block was a 427, which we don't have.
Well, and even some cars that had 454s, this one's a 327, and they're claiming on the air cleaner, at least, 300 horsepower. That would have been 300 gross horsepower.
Yes.
So if you were to put this on a dyno to the rear wheels, it would be not 300.
I want to say, like, for all of you Corvette, hardcore Corvette enthusiasts, you'll know this, but I want to say, like, in the early 70s, Chevy actually started not, you know, doing gross horsepower, but wheel horsepower. And that's, of course, when the horsepower went down significantly. Now, the C3 generation is unique in that it really is split into two parts. pre, let's call it 73 and post 73, or in other words, the chrome bumper cars versus the
kind the of urethane the bumper, urethane the bumper older cars, which yeah look dramatically different. Also, as emissions came into play,
yes, and
the
that's,
powertrains were pretty different.
And you said the magic word emissions. Basically, you get into the malaise era of the 70s. So what happened? And I was a young lad at this point. The OPEC nations had a boycott, and we started rationing fuel in America. And that led to us also rationing horsepower eventually. And so cars became choked with emissions equipment.
Yeah.
And they also became much slower. And that happened about 73 or 74. And those cars are dirt cheap. You want to show them the headlights?
Yeah. What they still had, yeah, even in that era, were some fantastic pop-up headlights, which I might need to flip the key on again for, which I don't want to do if I'm not making sure it's not going to go flying at Cole. Oh, come on.
Come on, now you can start. All right, pop the headlights. Look at that. Oh, they were coming up.
See?
There they go.
Oh, yeah, pop-up headlights. One of them is a little bit of a lazy eye.
Yeah.
It comes up slower than the other.
And goes down
slower.
And the other must be vacuum operated, same thing.
But it's still very cool.
Very cool.
I agree with you that I really do think the shape and the design of this car is among the best, not only of Corvettes of all time, but of just cars, period.
Yeah, the Coke bottle shape is incredible. And interestingly, value-wise, the chrome bumper cars are a lot more valuable than the urethane bumper cars.
Which makes sense.
So this car we bought for $22,000, if this were a urethane bumper, let's say if this was a 75 or even an anniversary, those cars are between $5,000 and $20,000 all day long.
Yeah.
And more likely they're like a $10,000 car.
And honestly, as much as I prefer these earlier C3s in their styling, for $10,000, you can't knock it.
Yeah.
That's a potentially a very fun car for the money.
Yeah, it is. And you know, since we bought that car, we need to kind of say goodbye to some of these. So if you guys are interested
in, are you selling the C3?
Yeah,
this is news to me.
Yeah, I'm ready to move this on because I think we've done about everything we can do with it right now. So I think it's time for it to go. So if you're interested, shoot us an email at info@TFLcar. And I haven't decided on a price yet, but we did pay $22,000 for it. I think it's worth like in the mid-20 range. It's a driver. It's mechanically sorted, but it's one of those 20-foot cars where, you know, it looks good from 20 feet away, but the paint job is not grand. This was an original Colorado car that sat for a long time.
Yeah.
The guy, I think it sat until like, from like 92 until now, where it was taken out of the barn, it was repainted. I don't know why they did yellow, but they did. This is originally this beautiful, like kind of rust copper red color,
sure,
which I would have liked better.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Somebody kind of did a yellow paint job on it. The other thing that's unique about these, I think this is the last era of real fiberglass.
Yeah.
When we get to the C4, people think that those are fiberglass, but they're actually composite. But I think this was still fiberglass.
Yeah. And speaking of fiberglass vehicles, this, driving it, to me has as much in common in the driving experience with a Chris Craft as it does with later Corvettes like the C4.
Well, tell me about that. What's it like to drive?
Since the seating position is not necessarily friendly to taller, bigger guys, the steering wheel is right in your lap.
Yeah, how do you, I have a hard time shifting it because the steering wheel is right in my lap and I can't lift my foot.
Well, yeah.
Because I can't lift my leg to actually shift it. It's hard.
The ergonomics of it are ridiculous. Also, where you sit in the car, it's true of the majority of these vehicles that we're talking about today, but you are right in front of the rear wheels. So it's something to get used to. There's a lot of hood, a lot of front end in front of you, so your seating position is kind of weird.
And that's the fun part, isn't it? Seeing that long, like, hood.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the tail of this car, too. Look at the back of this. Those two exhausts popping out the back, those four iconic round Corvette headlights, right?
Yeah, it's stunning.
This is just, it's just a really good design. It looks like one of our exhausts is going off a little bit sideways.
Yeah, which could be factory original. No, in the way that, again, these cars were constructed. No shade being thrown at the car either, because we absolutely love these. I love Corvettes as much as anybody out there, and this is just a rocking good time. But you got to appreciate it also for what it is.
Yeah, and ironically, you know, these became, Corvettes became known as old man cars, you know, cars that you would take to the golf club with your buddies to go golfing. Where do you put your golf clubs in this?
Yeah, especially being a convertible, you're a little out of luck. One thing I do love about a lot of Corvettes, though, is the fuel fill in the center here.
Yeah, it's cool.
At times, it can be a little bit stressful because you've got to walk the hose all the way over your bodywork to get to it. But this means you could pull up to a pump on either side, which I actually like a lot.
So the only storage in this car is this space behind the, right back here, behind the seats. So I guess you could perhaps, that's where the battery lives too.
Yeah.
You could perhaps squeeze, I guess, a set of golf clubs back there if you had to. Or if you were by yourself, I guess you could squeeze them in the passenger compartment. But that's about it. I do like the little plaque on the Corvette that tells you the way the gears go. I think that's kind of cool. And all those kind of old school dials and gauges feel not only retro, but feel really cool.
Yeah, the shape of the dash on a C3 Corvette feels very cockpit-like. It's angled backward. The gauges are deep set into that dash, so it's got a very unique appearance. I think you could pick it out of a lineup of any other dash on any other car. You wouldn't mistake a C3 Corvette dash for anything.
Yeah, and there's just some classic design features like the shark fin, like the shark gills on the side.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see those carried over into the C4. Unfortunately, they didn't carry the Coke bottle shape. And what size are these tires? Because we're going to be talking about tires in a second, because we're going to get extremely wide.
Yeah, well, we're going to get wider. We're also going to get much bigger in diameter.
Yeah.
So these are 15-inch wheels, and my rear tire here is a 225.
A 225 15, wow.
So not an especially wide tire.
Well, can you show it from behind? Because that's really where you can see like how wide that tire is. And so it's not all that wide.
No, it doesn't look out of place on a C3 because C3 is an older car and that's a more of a period correct tire size. But as we kind of transition onward, let's just look at a comparison between the width of a C3 rear tire and the width of especially our C4 ZR1, which is wider than a base C4. So this is a 315.
315, and this is a 17? How big is it?
Yeah, these are 17-inch wheels on a C4 ZR1 315. Even my base C4 that I used to have, as I owned it, not necessarily the factory tire size, maybe 10 millimeters wider, but I believe mine was a 285.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
So let's transition to the next generation. Like I said, you lost the Coke bottle shape. This became composite instead of fiberglass.
And it turned into a little bit more of a wedge car, which I actually like. I know I'm kind of, for the most part, alone in this, especially like you listen to Doug DeMuro's podcast or something. They, as well as most people, don't like C4s. I love C4s. This is crazy enough. I've owned a C4, and this is my favorite generation of Corvette. So feel free to make fun of me.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, you take a magnificent step toward modernity when you go from the C3 to the C4. You could consider this a modern sports car.
Yeah.
This was kind of a tweener between the C2, right, which is still pretty old school, whereas this is very modern.
I think one of the biggest things to the C4's credit that you can't get really from looking at pictures or necessarily watching videos of them is how much more modern, to your point, and how much better this car drives than a C3. This is so much more modern. This feels like a car, and this is a car, that in this day and age, you could stick on a track, you could put sticky rubber on it. Even if you have a base C4 Corvette, you can massage the engine a little bit and make it a fun and pretty competitive track day car.
Now, one of the great things about the C4 ZR1 that we have here is I think it's, some people, you know, the youngsters would say it's been slept on. I would say the market has undervalued this car because this was kind of Chevy's moonshot at the time. So it had just a lot of cutting edge technology.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, first overhead cam. And this is something that most people don't know before we get to the powertrain, which is really cool. This car was, I think, also 3 inches wider. And this is where the problem came in than a regular C4. Now, your C4 was how much when you bought it? You had a black one.
I bought a black one in good shape, less than 50,000 miles for $10,000.
So we paid $30,000, and I think you get a hell of a lot more car.
You do,
For, you know, basically $20,000 more. Now, the way you can tell a ZR1 from a regular C4 is two ways. First, the little chimsel up there, right? The little third brake light. That stays up there because the car, like I said, what GM did basically was they didn't just widen the car, they cut the car in half. So they did the engineering. So it's not like he just made the bodywork wider. You actually cut the car in half, and they added 3 inches of width to the whole car. And then the other way you can tell is ZR1s have this black surround because obviously this is where you can tell the 3 inches, right? This is where the license plate would normally be tucked up against a rear backup light.
But one of the issues that this car had is it was significantly more expensive. Whereas a base C4 Corvette like mine back in the day would have been around $30,000. I think this would have been more like $50,000.
No. You are way off.
So the original buyer of this car paid well over sticker.
Oh, yeah, but at least if I can find the sticker. The sticker on this car, if I remember, oh, shoot, where is the...
is it the glove box up top?
Yeah, but I think it's in the back. It's in here. Here it is. I kept all the paperwork.
Okay. We're showing the ergonomics of reaching into the back of a C4 Corvette right now.
Yeah, we've got the sticker.
We've got a lot of documents on this car.
Oh, yeah. This one's fully documented. So keep in mind, the original owner paid $10,000 over the sticker price. But look at the sticker.
$60,000.
Yeah. Whew. So, and he paid, I think, we've got the bill of sale here. I want to say he paid like $70,000 for this car.
So this is a crazy thing. Standard vehicle price, about $32,000 here in 1990. ZR1 special performance package, an additional $27,000. And this one has a few extras, but wow.
Wait, look how much he paid.
He paid
$80,000.
Oh, no.
He paid $20,000.
Well, look.
He paid $20,000. So, $20,000 over the sticker.
Which in 1990.
He paid $85,000 for this.
$80,000 in 1990.
Yeah.
Is a shocking amount.
By today's money, that's like $10 million.
And the other issue, And the other issue with that is that this car, at a glance, it doesn't, even though it is that much wider, like you said, and they put so much effort into that, this car doesn't look that different from a standard C4 Corvette.
I mean, how much would it cost to actually cut a car in half the long way and then widen it?
Well,
you think about the engineering to do that.
The amount of money, engineering, and development that went into this engine.
So here's another myth that people get wrong. And we'll show you guys, we'll start off and we'll show you the cool headlights because I think it's the only generation of Corvette where the lights actually do like a 180. They come up, they don't go up like this.
So the C3 lights just pop straight up. These ones do a little flip around.
It's really cool. So people think that, and this is true, that this engine was engineered by Lotus. And so the misconception is that basically GM pawned out the engineering of it to Lotus, and so that it was basically a British design. Except people forget that at that time, GM owned Lotus. So if you own the company that's doing the 4-cam, 32-valve powertrain, then it's really GM doing it. And then, and then of course, this is also all aluminum versus an iron block. And GM at that time didn't have a lot of experience with building all aluminum powertrains. And so what they did was they went to Mercury Marine
and had them manufacture it, especially because it was a smaller volume engine.
Yep.
And they were better equipped for that. And GM made this a big challenge, unnecessarily so, for Lotus, because if I remember right, I think they wanted the same bore spacing as a regular 5.7 small block Chevy, which was just kind of an unnecessary design limitation.
When Lotus first came out, the bore spacing was a little different.
Yeah.
And GM said no. And then they had to redo the entire engine at a cost of, probably tens of millions to get the exact same bore spacing as a traditional.
So they made it very difficult. But 375 horsepower on these early cars, later on, like 405 horsepower. This one, 370 pound-feet of torque. So for its day, a very potent
with the
engine.
Key. Why don't you show them that while we're at it? Show them the key, because that's the cool part. This is
it
long
is.
Before the red key came along in the Hellcats.
Yeah, so this is a neat little party trick. You have this additional key that lives in the dash, and it's got two settings, normal and full. So if you stick this in the full power mode, that's how you get, at least on this car, the full 375 horsepower. Once again, on some later ZR1s, 405. And these ZR1s in 1990 had this updated interior that a lot of people like more than early C4 Corvette interiors. I don't think this one is as retro and fun looking as early C4 Corvette interiors, but it's maybe, you could argue, better executed.
Well, let's do this. Here, you start it up, and I'll get the exhaust note, and you can show them the instrument cluster.
Yeah. I've got this key in my pocket. This car, we might need to do a little top end work on, because it does blow some oil. And a little belt squib. But the other funny thing about this car is that for this being a halo car, an insane performance vehicle, they really didn't make it very loud.
No, it's not that loud.
It's super quiet.
What they did, at least in this version, is they made it very uncomfortable, and that's why you're sitting in it, because my big American ass will not fit in between those two bolsters.
There are several different seats you could get in yes. C4 Corvettes. This is one that I think they paid extra for. It was a more aggressive seat. It does have some pretty tight bolsters, and yeah, I agree, even as narrow as
I am. And then if you show them that little switch between below the gear shift lever, and between the armrest right there, this is one of the first versions of basically ride control. So you can just change the way the vehicle rides. And what are the different options?
Tour, sport, and performance, which is cool, because that means when it's time to replace your shocks, you can spend more money.
Yeah, because they're more expensive. But
yeah.
But you'll see that also in the Z06. The other thing that's, I think, really cool about it is that, of course, most Corvettes come as either Targas or convertibles. And this one particularly has both the glass roof, which we have on, and then we'll show the back end in a second. It's also got the regular roof. So
yeah,
it's kinda
so I can
cool.
make eye contact with you through a transparent roof, which you can't do in every car, and you can remove this panel. So even though this isn't a traditional convertible, like you said, it's more like a Targa, so you could pull the top off and still have it be like a convertible, which I think is really neat. Now, let me close the hood real quick so we can show the wonderful headlights.
Before I do that, let me talk about another. You remember we were talking about ergonomic issues with the C3? Well, this one has a horrible ergonomic issue, and that is the sill size.
Oh, it's not that bad.
What they did, it's like 4 inches, dude.
Look, you just fall into it.
Look, look at that sill. What they did was they wanted to have incredible structural rigidity, and because it is a Targa, to get that they put all that rigidity in this, like, no, it's like a 6-inch sill.
I mean, and it succeeded. It's a car very stiff, good handling,
very hard to get
these sills totally worth it. It's easier than your BMW i8.
True,
you got to admit.
Yeah,
that's a low bar.
That is a low bar. All right, you want to show them the lights?
Yeah, we got to show the pop-up lights.
Show up the pop-up lights. Yeah, they're cool.
This on a lot of C4 Corvettes, if you're ever shopping around for a C4 Corvette, and you look at one and both of the lights pop up exactly how they're supposed to, then you're probably looking at one in decent shape.
Yeah.
Because it is far from impossible for these to fail. Like on my C4, those lights originally, they came with plastic gears. Whose idea that was. You can replace them with brass gears, which is good and you should do, but it's such a fun operation with these headlights.
So with this car, it is my 911, which we're also selling, by the way.
Yeah.
The 87 911, we're also selling that. We just bought a whole bunch of, we bought this, we bought a Bentley, and we bought a Defender. So we're selling a lot of cars to help pay for those. But that one was my problem child previously because the convertible didn't work. This is our new problem child because first gear, the synchro, I think is...
Yeah.
And I think the engine's got some issues.
Yeah, we brought this over to a buddy of ours that does a lot of dyno tuning. So
yep.
We actually ran this on the dyno as well as the Viper, and had him go through it because he owns a ZR1. He had even another ZR1 before that one, so he's definitely pretty well versed in these cars, and he feels like this one throughout its life has been driven pretty hard.
Yeah, how many miles is that? It's like
20-something
thousand. It's not a lot, yeah.
No, not that many miles, but in those amount of miles, it seems like this car lived
a rough life. Or somebody did
a
lot of hard starts.
Yeah, so.
So we're going to try to put this back. We might have to swap out the transmission, which isn't going to be cheap. Also, another thing that I'm looking at it is, you see this right there?
Yeah.
So that is a little cutout because these are actually very rare. So if you're looking at a C4 ZR1, finding one with an original windshield is very hard. And you know that because you've got this cutout right there. And what GM did at that time is they put this film on the windshield, which helped with the solar radiation. But what at that time was a big deal was, of course, speeding and getting speeding tickets. And because of this film, radar detectors would not function. So GM cut out a little section of the film where you could place your radar detector and actually have it function so that if you were driving a little more spirited than the law would allow, you could have a fuzzbuster. And back then they were fuzzbusters that would function.
Yeah, and these windshields are cool, but they're also, like you said, very expensive because there's not that many of them out
there. Yeah,
they
don't make them anymore.
So they sell for quite a bit of money. This is especially scary because we live in Colorado. If this windshield were to get cracked,
we couldn't replace it, or it'd be very expensive to replace.
At least
with the original cutout, you could replace
it. A huge bummer.
Yeah. And so I think this car is worth hopefully putting some money into because it does have, well, let's show them the back. Let's pop it. It does have both tops. It does have the original windshield.
Now, on my...
It is low mileage.
C4, yeah. There we go. That's the same.
Oh,
did not quite do it.
No, try again.
Oh, there we go.
It just doesn't have... So in this one, you could obviously... Oh, it's got the bad struts. Of course it does. it does have enough room for golf clubs, and we do also have the hard top, which slots in like kind of on like the Z06.
Exactly. So you can actually latch the hard top here in the trunk, which is cool. So you have a place to store it if you want to pop it off. I like.
And once again, center-mounted gas cap, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. So you can fill up on either side. I love that. Now, before we move into the modern era...
We're going to have to jump over to the natural competitor. But let me finish up on this car. So in case you guys are wondering, because, you know, we like to bring you along on these journeys. We do have a buddy who is expert at these. When you put it on the dyno, what was it putting out? I think people would be curious about that.
Yeah, so I can't remember the exact number. It was in the 300s. So the dyno is measuring wheel horsepower, not crank horsepower. And this, you would expect to be in maybe the, well, I don't know, 10, 15%, whatever drivetrain loss for 375 horsepower. You would expect it
like 320, 325.
Yeah, maybe even a little higher than that.
Yeah.
And we were, if I remember right, around 300. So it didn't, on the dyno, seem like this car was necessarily underperforming. But then getting out on the streets, compared to Jordan's ZR1, he felt like on the road, it wasn't performing as well.
So the plan with this car is, hopefully we'll sell the yellow one and help finance the repairs on this car. So, I mean, the first gear synchro is just driving me crazy. Don't like every time you put it in first gear, if you don't double clutch, you get that.
Yeah.
So we want to get that sorted, and we want to get the engine back to where it should be. Otherwise, the car is in great shape.
Yeah, especially cosmetically. Cosmetically, it's fantastic, which
paint's
I think
great.
is as important as anything, because paint, especially original paint, is tough. Doing some maintenance on the driveline, to me, that's not a huge deal. It is what it is.
And this year we also purchased this car, which would have been the natural competitor to the ZR1 back in the 90s. And of course, this is the first generation Dodge Viper. And this was a vehicle that was basically meant as an, I don't know, competitor, homage, whatever you want to call it, to the Cobra. So Bob Lutz did this when he was at Chrysler.
Yeah.
And this is about as raw as you can get. I mean, back in the day, this was known as a widowmaker because there are no driver aids. If you want an analog car, this is it.
Yeah, no airbags, no traction control, no ABS, nothing. It's just you and an 8-liter V10 with 400 horsepower, 460 pound-feet of torque. So even this car being over 30 years old, it still feels quick. And it puts down some decent quarter-mile times. Even here, a mile above sea level, we've gone under 14 seconds in the quarter-mile, which is not that far off of the times that these were putting down when they were brand new at sea level on a prep surface. So this is a beast. And when we put this on the dyno, this exceeded, kind of well exceeded, what we were expecting it to put down.
So this is a great example because the two are very diametrically opposed. So this was GM's moonshot in terms of technology,
the
right?
Corvette, yeah.
The Corvette, the 01 Corvette. I mean, like I said, there was not an overhead cam Corvette until the Z06 came along. That's how many years? That's
yeah.
40 years, right? That there was no overhead cam Corvette. This, on the other hand,
yeah,
is the exact opposite. So there's also a myth that we need to dispel. You want to pop the hood and show them how that's done?
It's an interesting process because you start out at the very front of the Viper. So not that I recommend doing this, but technically, if you walk up to any first-gen Viper, you can pop the hood. Also, the doors don't have door locks, so that helps. But
oh, and you got there's also a second latch.
Yeah, yeah. So you initially.
And you do that.
Do the latch.
And then you got to come over here, and you need two people because this hood is one of the biggest hoods in the automotive business. And then it opens up like this, and of course that is what the Viper is known for. Is it a how many liters? Six.
Eight.
8 liter. That's right. 8 liter V10.
Yeah, it's a big one. And it's a beast. The funny thing about this engine is that a lot of people, especially on the internet, say they don't think this car sounds good. I gotta say, in person and from the driver's seat, when you ring it out, it's not bad. Yeah, I think it sounds really cool.
Yeah, so the issue there is it doesn't have a cross pipe, and so we're hearing only five of the cylinders because, of course, the exhaust comes out the side. All right.
And who doesn't like five cylinders?
Yeah, and what you're hearing is only half of the firing order, basically. And so people assume, and this is the biggest myth of the Viper, that this is a truck engine. Because, of course, now at that time it was Dodge, now it's Ram. They do build truck engines.
Yeah.
But the story behind it is exactly the opposite. So when this car was developed, once again, Chrysler at the time didn't have expertise in building aluminum powertrains, and they wanted what the Corvette had. They wanted this very advanced dynamic 10 cylinder, and at that time they owned Lamborghini.
Yeah.
So they actually went to Lamborghini, which had been building 12 cylinders forever.
Yeah.
And they said, can you design a 10 cylinder and can you make it an overhead cam and yada yada yada. And of course, being Chrysler, about halfway through the process they ran out of money.
Yeah.
And so instead of getting this very sophisticated engine, they got a pushrod V10.
Yeah, so it's still shares, there's a lot of similarities between the design of this V10 and the V10s that you would find in similar era.
Right, because
Dodge
this eventually became a truck engine. So this came first, and then eventually they incorporated the design of this into a truck engine, but the truck engine wasn't aluminum. It was an iron block.
Oh, yeah, no.
So this,
it's massively different.
Yeah, so yeah. This is what the truck engine was based on, but this is not a truck engine. This was designed by Lamborghini for this car as a Viper engine.
This is also not a Lamborghini V10 because Lamborghini's V10s are very different.
They're not pushrod motors.
No,
exactly.
But this being a pushrod engine, they are actually pretty durable. And I gotta say, I love about this car, you can be very rough with it. You can launch it hard. It's tough. The driveline of this car is very tough.
I mean, you said it, durable. These are almost unbreakable. They're about as reliable as any sports car ever made.
And since we're talking about how they sound, I might as well go ahead and fire it up. I'm going to preface that there's a check valve on the in the fuel system on these that
fails.
Is a pretty common issue. So it might take a little bit of cranking, but when it starts up, it's great. Oh, not bad. Oh, wait.
Almost.
One more. It's got it.
Yeah, now that is music to my ears, as the cliche goes, Case. I love that.
Now, if you're at all concerned, we did let these cars warm up before starting this podcast.
Yes, don't worry. We drove them here.
They're not
warm.
They're not cold as we're starting them up and revving them. But one of the funny things about these vehicles are these exhaust pipes. There's a little caution, a warning here on the door jamb that tells you, be careful because the exhaust gets very hot. You can very easily burn yourself. Generally, here at work, we always wear pants,
yes.
So it's not as much of an issue, but if you're in shorts.
But you can get a little round tattoo off that exhaust pipe if you were to like, you know, back of your leg up into
it. Oh, yeah. Which is easy to do because this, you were talking about the ZR1 sill.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Well, that one's...
It's not as tall, but...
It's wide.
It's a foot wide.
Yeah. Now, the thing about Vipers is, of course, there's three generations. Well, there's five, but really two of them are kind of mid-generation.
Yeah.
So the mid-generation, this first generation, the mid-gen refresh, they routed the exhaust out the back.
Yeah, and I think the side pipes are...
I think the side pipes are cooler. Now, cool. The craziest thing about this car, of course, was that it was meant to, like I said, compete with the original Cobra, which, you know, Shelby did, right?
Or at least have a similar philosophy to it, yeah.
And the interior is the... If you're being kind, it's the most basic interior of any vehicle that I've ever owned or we've ever owned.
It's hilarious. There are essentially exposed... basically wood screws holding the dash together, and it does not age well. Our glove box, for example, a lot of this finish on the plastic is scraped off, and you would think, well, this car's pretty old. It's also got, what, 18 or so thousand miles? So that happens in that short of a time. It's just not an interior that holds up well. Look at the steering wheel, too. It looks like it's out of an arcade game.
Yeah, there's certainly no airbag there to get in the way of, you know, your driving performance. I gotta say, if you're buying a Viper because you want a nice interior, probably buying it...
Look elsewhere.
Well, this is all about the driving experience. Once again, if you think the C3 is analog, this is...
Yeah.
This is beyond analog.
Well, because this car was really designed... It was initially designed not even to have a top, so this top was kind of an afterthought, and you can tell by the way it sits here.
It looks like a baseball cap.
It looks like a hat turned backwards because... The gap at the back is ridiculous. I love one of Tommy's things that we talked about when comparing this car to the C4 ZR1 was, if you want cup holders, get a Corvette. You want a roof, get a Corvette.
Now, also the back window comes out, and luckily when we bought this for $40,000 from a used police officer, and he had all the bells and whistles. So we have the soft top, we have the soft windows, we have the hard windows that just slot in. The problem is once you put the windows in, you can lock yourself out very easily because there's no door handles.
So there's no exterior door handles. Generally, you just reach in and grab the door handle on the inside of the door. But if you do have the windows in, what you can do is you can double press the key fob and it pops the door out. But as we were finding this morning, it doesn't necessarily work well.
Yeah, so it's a little concerning. We decided to take the windows out because, once again, you don't want to lock yourself out. The other thing that this did not come with, which is the money that we did put into it, unless you're on the other side because it's a little nicer on the other side. Just don't look over here. Is we did find the original wheels for it. This one had the next generation chrome wheels. You know, it was like that moment
in
time.
Yeah, like a GTS wheel.
Yeah,
maybe even a later wheel than that.
Yeah, where they were chrome, and I just hate that generation of wheels. So these were brand new, out of the box Chrysler wheels, this is what the car would look like when it came out of the factory.
And you'll notice the wheels and the whole rest of the car are very dirty, which may bother you, but ultimately, all of these vehicles, these are not museum pieces, they're not show cars. These are drivers. We drive them, go long distances, we take them drag racing so that we can make videos for people to watch. Because there are plenty of these sitting in museums, these ones we want to drive, so that's why it looks the way it does. A lot of people don't love these kind of throwing star style wheels, but they are very correct to the car and to the era, and an iconic part of the original design.
And of course the tire size is crazy.
Yeah, here on the rear it's a 335 on a 17-inch wheel, which is an insanely difficult tire to find.
Yeah, and show them from the back again, Cole, because that's where you get the real...
There are very few companies that make these tires. Michelin is one of them, and they sent us these tires for this car.
So thank you, Michelin, because you can't get them any other way.
Which we also really appreciate because, like you said, these have a reputation for being dangerous, for being poorly made, like we said. And all of these things that we're laughing about with the interior and everything is not to the detriment of this car, because it all adds to the experience and the lore and the history of it. But it is so nice having fresh rubber on this car because we drag race it a lot, and being on 20-year-old tires in this, bad combo.
So I have to say, I've driven it a lot. It likes drag racing. It likes, it likes cruising.
Have you tried cornering it? I haven't.
I haven't tried cornering it very hard. because of its reputation, but it doesn't scare me.
I just drive it straight.
I've taken it around a corner at pretty good speeds, but I think the Widowmaker was probably in its time a fair assessment of the car. But yesterday I drove a Rivian with 1,000 horsepower.
Sure.
So in today's modern world where, you know, we're seeing cars in excess of not just 1,000, but 1,500, maybe even 2,000 horsepower, this doesn't seem as frightening as it did back in the 90s.
Genuinely, in a straight line, this is, to your point, a very friendly car. You can launch it hard, you can rang it out, you can go as fast as you want in a straight line. No problem there. What, to my understanding, gives this a lot of that Widowmaker reputation that's still true of it, is if you exceed traction around a corner, it's not like you've got a nice little window that you can operate in, step out the back end and keep it under control. It sounds like if you're cornering this hard and it goes, it's gone.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody who actually tracks them, and they said what ends up happening is, it goes, right? Let's say you're on a track and the back end starts to go. Typically what happens with these is you correct and you think you got it,
and then
it pendulums back the other way, and that's where you lose it. So it goes one way, you correct, and then it goes exactly the other way, and then you're done.
And this not being in my car, I don't want to find out.
I don't want to find out either, because this car does have to pay for itself. Like you said, one of the reasons we're selling that car is we're kind of done with it. We've done as many videos as we can, and so it's time for it to move on.
And we're not going to make any money crashing that.
No.
We're not that kind of channel.
Now, we're missing two cars here.
Yeah, no, that's actually, true.
Three cars. We're missing a C5, C6, and a C7.
We've owned the C5 and the C6. I think the C5 is an awesome hot rod platform for making a fast car for not that much money. C6 is a great too, especially Z01s and Z06s in the C6 are way badass. We had a base model C6.
Yep.
It's still a fun, quick
manual
car.
With a aftermarket exhaust, which sounded well. But the one rub against, probably starting with actually that one, is the interiors were always a little plasticky. They weren't quite world class, right?
Yeah, the C7's not too bad.
The C7, it got much better. But let's talk about this. When you get to this car, of course, the biggest difference, you know this case, is that the engine moved from the front for the first time. I was going to say back, but it's really middle.
Which Roman, it means there's no manual. What's going on?
Is the
only automatic car here.
Yeah, the C7 was the last manual, even though I did not love that 7-speed in the C7. Same thing with the 911 7-speed. I always found that 7th gear to be extraneous. I don't know why we went with 7, but that's a whole other story. But let's talk about, a car that now is world class. Because there are actually, five cars in the current C5 lineup. So there's the base Stingray.
Yep.
And that starts at about 70,000. And if you go to the 3LT, you get up to about 100,000.
Yeah, there's the E-Ray.
There's the E-Ray, which has the same powertrain as the base car, but it has an electric motor in the front.
Yeah, so it makes some more power. It's one of the quicker accelerating.
Yeah, because it's the only one that's all-wheel drive.
Yep.
And then I think you've got the one that is the most track-worthy, the sweet spot, and that is the Z06. So with this car, this one was 138,000, but because everybody wants a ZR1, dealers started discounting them, and this was discounted by 8,000, so it was 130. So we actually traded in our C8, which was a 3LT, got 65,000 for it, and then we got a substantial discount on this car.
Yeah.
And so that's why we decided to do it, because we wanted to experience what I think is the sweet spot and the best Corvette of them all. And there's a big difference between the E-Ray and the Stingray to the Z06, ZR1, and ZR1X. Now, the ZR1X, of course, ZR1 has twin turbos on this engine, gives you 1,000 horsepower. The ZR1X, you get up to 1,200, because then you get the electric all-wheel drive.
Yeah, so the ZR1X kind of throws in everything in the kitchen sink, which is cool. But to your point, I actually think for most people, the Z06 would probably be the more fun car to have, because already 670 horsepower, 460 pound-feet of torque, this is a fast car.
Yeah, this is an incredibly fast car. We've just drag raced it once. We're going to do a lot more drag racing with it now that we finally got it sort of kind of broken in. And of course, this being a Corvette, it is also incredibly practical. So not only do you have room behind the engine.
Yeah, I wouldn't use it to move, to your next house or anything, but I got my camera bag in the back here, and there's still some more space.
And then you can also put in the roof. It's a Targa, so it also slots in here. So there is room for it. And then you also have actually a pretty deep front trunk. which, you know, is surprisingly...
Yeah,
so you lose that in the ZR1. That becomes basically a giant fan to cool off the engine.
I like that they've got a little button in here for you to escape just in case somebody sticks you unwillingly in the front of their C8 Corvette.
Do you know Jill? Manila? No. Yeah, automotive journalist. She's like 5'9", 4'10". I don't know. Sorry, Jill. But she always jumps in the back of... So she might actually be able to fit in here and then pop...
Is this something you've pondered?
That's what she does. You know, Nathan used to do it. That was his shtick, right?
Nathan would not fit in the front of a C8.
No, like half of Nathan would not fit in
there. Yeah, I think that's a little ambitious, potentially.
But Jill started doing it, so I'm just mentioning the fact that she might. Now, the styling of this has been somewhat controversial. Obviously, it's jet fighter inspired.
Yeah.
Some people say it's overwrought. They think that there's too many sharp angles, too many lines intersecting in too many places. I kind of like it. And the difference, of course, between the base Corvette Stingray and the Z06 is that it's wider.
Yeah, much wider, noticeably so. Which makes it a better looking car.
I think it makes it a much better looking car.
It's got a better stance. Also, our base C8 Corvette that we had, 2020, so the year that car came out, the base Corvette had exhaust in the corners. This one has the four pipes in the center, which also looks really cool. And then a pretty massive 345 width tire
so
on a 21 inch wheel in the front, 20 inch wheel in the front. Yeah, 345. That's a lot of
rubber. Well, you got to get, 670 horsepower down. And I have to be, completely fair, I have not driven the ZR1 or the ZR1X, but I do have a rule that, 600 horsepower in a road-going car is about as much as you want. I worry that 1,000 horsepower, 1,200 horsepower, and yeah, there's a lot of people who say there's no such thing as, there's no replacement for displacement. There's no such thing as too much horsepower. 1,000 horsepower going to the rear wheels, it might be too much, Case.
Yeah, well, so like we have said many times and many other people have said, it's more fun to drive a slow car fast than a fast car slow. This is not a slow car. In the world of diminishing returns, I'm not sure how much more fun you have with a ZR1 than a Z06 because it's just that less often that you can actually lean into the pedal. So I think that this is about as aggressive as a car you're going to drive on the street needs to be, then some.
You figure a ZR1 is going to cost at least $200,000. So like I said, this was $130,000 after discount. That's $70,000 more if you could get one. I've heard of dealers now charging $100,000 oversticker on the ZR1s. Oof. These were going at $30,000 oversticker initially. And now, of course, this is I think 2023 was the first year for the Z06. So this is now, we're 3 years into it. Because everybody wanted the ZR1, the Z06s became affordable. So that's why we thought, let's jump on it while we can do it. Now, you'll note that this does not have the giant spoiler.
Yeah.
So we don't have the track package in this car, which I'm actually happy about because it has a lot more aerodynamic.
Yeah, I'm not a big aero guy either. No. So I think this looks better. It's slightly more subtle. I don't know if this car is subtle.
It's not subtle, but it's more subtle. And there was also a stop sale that went on for a long time because what would happen is these would burn to the ground.
Yeah.
The reason for that is these have these giant
coolers
right there.
Behind the doors.
In the base Corvette, the Stingray, when you stopped it, the fans would turn off. In the Z06, ZR1, and ZR1X, the fans stay on. And when you're fueling the car right here, what could have happened and what did happen is you could get fuel into that...
Vapors,
and that would get into the engine compartment, which would then ignite and burn the car down. And so there was like a three-month stop sale on these where GM engineered a fix so that because the fan stays on, even when you turn the engine off, it doesn't necessarily suck the air and burn down the car. You want to show them the interior? I think this is world class. The Europeans don't think so, but they're a little snooty.
Yeah, I think for a performance car, this is a plenty.
Here you go. You're going to want this.
Fine interior.
This has the old interior. So some people don't like that waterfall of switches. I love it. I love real buttons. So what they did for 2026 is they got rid of that waterfall. They gave you bigger cup holders. And then over here, they put a third screen in right there. So a lot of that is on an extra screen. I love those buttons. I'm a big fan.
I think that they are very distinctive. I can understand how some people might find them a little busy and not necessarily intuitive because there's a lot going on right here. But it's a very driver-centric interior. I don't think it's at all a bad interior. We've got as square of a square steering wheel as Square gets these carbon paddles for the 8-speed
carbon fiber up here.
Yeah.
And that's also different from the Z06 now. Three drive modes. So you have Tour, Sport, and Track. And then, of course, you've got a very different engine, being a flat plane crank. So this is more. Yeah. Let's say this is more of a Ferrari than a Corvette, at least in the way it sounds. And you want to start up and
let's listen to it. It's limiting my revs.
Yeah, it does that. Yeah, we got it. I jumped like 3 feet when you started it. It's a little like Lamborghini obnoxious when it does
the,
that.
The startup tells you everything that you need to know.
Yeah.
And it does that every single time. The first time I started this car, I looked down at my big boots and I thought, was a part of my boot up against the throttle pedal? That's just how it cranks up every single time.
Yeah, it's a little obnoxious.
It is, but it's cool because this Z06 genuinely has such a different character and personality to it than the base C8 Corvette.
Yeah, it's so different.
They feel like two different cars.
They are two different cars. The base one, which we owned until we got this one, that is much more a traditional Corvette. If you want to call it an old man car, it's much more relaxed. You kind of cruise down the road. The engine is turning over at a much lower RPM.
Yeah, this torquey 6.2 versus this very high strung 5.5.
Yeah, this car is like, let's go. I'm going to go. The steering is much sharper on this car as well. It kind of tends to follow grooves, which is not great. But this is definitely a car that wants to be exercised and not a car that necessarily you just want to kind of take a nice day, take the top down and kind of go for a leisurely ice cream. This is, let's go to the track, let's go on the Autobahn. And ironically, the base Corvette actually has a higher top end than this one. So I think I want to say the top end on this one is like 190 or 95, whereas on the base one, it's like 205. So if you're going to get an Autobahn cruiser and you want to go at 205, get the base Stingray.
But not that I'm sure anyone's really going to take advantage of that. But even though this car is so much more expensive than the other older cars that we've talked about so far as performance is concerned, this is still not a bad deal. As well, ZR1, ZR1X, that's a lot of car for the money.
I mean, you know, you could compare, let's say you compare this to like a GT, not a GTRS, but a 911 GT3, right?
Yeah.
This car at $130,000 is probably 200,000 less than a GT3. And now, forget about the GT3 RS.
That this has everything going for it that a 911 does.
I think it does. I'm going to go there. I'm going to say it's got everything that a 911 does.
I think there's some refinement, some engineering, some build quality things.
That's what the Europeans would say. But, you know,
we've owned a
911, the current one, 911 Targa S. And this car, to me, That was 158, and that was before prices went through the roof. Today, that'd be a $200,000 car. This car, to me, is just, the Targa is the heaviest and the least sporty of all of the 911s. But still, to me, this car is much more fun and much more.
We've certainly come a long way from the C3 and the C4. So the build quality and the interior materials, fit and finish, refinement on a brand new Corvette is not going to be as different as it was in those days.
Yes.
Maybe not as noticeably so. But yeah, I mean, the 911's still got a lot going for it. I still think those are fantastic cars. Not that I get
I'm not dissing the 911. The issue I had with ours and the reason we ended up selling it was, which is stupid because we should have held on to it because prices of 911s have gone through the roof right now. The reason we got rid of it is I just didn't want to have one car that had $160,000 of company money in it when it wasn't making any more money. So it was time for it to move on. And the same thing will happen with this.
Yeah.
You could put all these three together and still you don't get to this. And from a content point of view, that's more interesting.
But these are epic cars, even for the money, even this being much more expensive than the others, like we said. And if you want to get a base C8 Corvette, you can find some pretty solid deals on those.
All day long. For even
and that's
like
a lot of car for 60K.
You know, even like a 2LT right now, that's a lot of car. And I think part of that problem is because there is this mystique behind the Ferrari and behind the 911 that the Corvette is always considered and has been considered, I think, like the
step
old man
below
car or the everyman car, whatever you want to call it. But I think with this C8, Corvette has taken the next step where you could go and you could put this head-to-head against a Ferrari or a 911 and not be ashamed to show up with this and, you know, feel like you've got a vehicle that is world-class versus something that is, you know, American plastic, the way that the Europeans would describe it.
But what they've maintained throughout all the generations and even in their competitor that is the Viper is that you can have a lot of fun for whatever amount of money, whatever price bracket you might be shopping around for, whether it's 10 grand or $200,000, these are so much fun, all these cars. A lot of muscle. They're each one of them is like an American flag on wheels.
Well, the one that I would think is a bargain is the first generation Viper. So Vipers are weird. The older they are, the cheaper they are. If you got the last generation, is it ACR? The one that was... Yeah, it was ACR, right?
Yeah.
Those are now like $300,000 cars.
Yeah.
Which seems crazy to me. But the first generation, you know.
Yeah, and...
10 cylinders, 8 liters, $40,000, maybe a little bit more now. That is a lot of car. I think you can say the same thing about the ZR1. Just
yeah,
a lot of
totally.
Car for $30,000. And if you want, a Corvette that isn't in that malaise era, 73 to 80, whatever it is, too... then those early Corvettes are also a hoot.
I think
you're exactly right, Case. You nailed it. And by the way, Case, a quick little commercial. Let's show what we're wearing here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got our TFL Studios hoodies on. Even Andre's wearing one today.
We're all wearing
one. And I'm going to be doing a podcast with him later.
We didn't know each other.
No, we did not. It's not coordinated.
But if you're looking for a stocking stuffer, we're selling those at our merch store. So if you want a hoodie with TFL Studios on it or a cup or a sticker, just click on the link below to our little... store and get yourself one for the holidays.
And we promise we'll put that money straight into other Corvettes.
We'll promise we'll waste the money into some silly sports car or truck. That's going to happen immediately.
Of all of these vehicles, though, this first-gen Viper, even up against the Z06, this is the most... the biggest experience. This is the one that sticks with you the most,
I think. I think, you know... I mean, a giveaway is that three of these cars are manual, one isn't.
Yeah.
And you know, if you want something, and I think people are longing for that now with how cars have become electrified and with autonomy, cars have become toasters. Let's be honest about it. And these are as far away from a toaster as you can get.
Yeah, and especially some of these older analog vehicles I like a lot. And I would say the ZR1 is definitely a better car than the Viper.
Yeah.
But the Viper is
more of a fun car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100%. So way more of an experience.
Should we start them all up? We promised to.
Sure. Right. Which one? Here, I've got a lot of the keys.
Right. I'll start.
That's a C8.
Yeah. We'll do this last because it's the loudest. Well, actually, the Viper might be the loudest.
The Viper.
Let's do it in order.
Yeah?
Yeah, let's
we'll
do it in
start
order.
With the C3.
Yeah. Yeah, start with the C3. I'll let you do the work.
Yeah, the C3, being it as old as it is and as cold. Yeah. As it is today, has been,
been a little temperamental,
a little grumpy, but since it's got
look at
some,
that. Now that it's warmed up, starts right up.
Since it's got some temp in it, no problem.
All right, let's go next.
Oh, it sounds awesome. The C4 had a much easier time this morning cranking up.
Very quiet car.
It is. I don't think we're going to hear it among the competition.
Yeah.
Except for the belt.
Yeah.
We do hear
It's a little smoky.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
Do you want the Viper next or
the Viper.
C8?
Yeah, let's do the Viper.
Let's see if...
We don't have enough people to rev them, so we're just going to have to idle them.
If it cranks up any easier...
I bet you it'll start up right away. Maybe I was wrong. There you go.
Oh, no!
Oh, come on, Viper.
Yeah, the Viper is not quiet, huh?
All right, last one.
And finally.
I'll stand in the middle here. You can hear the glory.
The aggressive Z06.
Yeah.
And that is the noisiest end to a podcast we've ever filmed.
Yeah. As always, guys, head over to All TFL for all of our videos. And, Case, this is a lot of fun.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Ciao.